You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, many in our Westwood and West Los Angeles community are greeting one another with the words Shana Tova over the next few days because it's the celebration, as you may recall, of Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the Jewish New Year. Now, the origin of this particular holy day and which new year it represents really isn't all that clear. Some in the rabbinic tradition say it's supposed to be that God created what the philosophers and theologians like to say in ex nihilo, meaning God created out of nothing, and that's the beginning of this new year. Others suggest that it represented the creation and the entrance of humankind through Adam and Eve into the picture. Regardless, we know that there are synagogues around the world where the shofar will be blown today, representing the beginning of yet another cycle in the life of God's chosen people. Well, the text that was read to us this morning from Exodus points to another major holy day within the Jewish tradition, Passover or Pesach, as it would be more likely called. Now, at a very, very basic level, the theme of Passover represents this Exodus story, the movement from slavery to freedom. And this story is told year after year of when the people were captives in Egypt and their eventual release that came under the leadership of Moses. Every year, and some of you may have attended one of these meals before, Passover is observed with a ritual meal, the Seder. And every year it concludes with the greeting, Lashana Haba Abba Yerushalayim, which means next year in Jerusalem. And it's a statement of hope every year, of hope which acknowledges that we all live in an imperfect world and we look forward to a time, maybe next year, when peace may be what prevails in our world and our land. Well, once again, as we think about this story we heard in Exodus, we're following on this journey, on this story of the relationship between God and between those who were called the chosen people. And we have another little part of this strange path of the covenant. Remember the covenant we've been talking about the last several weeks, where God made the promise of land and offspring to Abram and Sarai. Last week, you might remember, we focused on Jacob's sons moving their families to Egypt. This was, of course, after they had sold their brother Joseph into slavery. And we were dealing with the drama that happened when all of a sudden this estranged family is reunited and we're absolutely amazed at the themes of forgiveness and redemption that somehow took place and worked themselves into the story. And when we left the family last week, it appeared that all was going to be well. Well, of course, we know that's never the case when it comes to our biblical heritage in the story of the covenant. There's always this moving back and forth and in between paradise and wilderness, as I'm calling the sermon series this year, that in between was always at play, both literally and figuratively. Now, the Hebrew nation, as the book of Exodus teaches us, eventually became, shall we say, an unwelcome people in Egypt. They were sojourners who had left their homeland because there was famine and because there was no opportunity. They were immigrants. Originally, they were embraced by the receiving nation. And it's safe to assume that they were probably a very important part of the economy of ancient Egypt. Well, in this story in Exodus, we catch up with them much later when things had changed greatly. The Hebrew nation was, according to the storytellers, now considered to be a threat to the Egyptians. Those who were once a welcomed people were now considered to be a threat. Does that sound familiar to you at all? It's not too difficult to imagine what was being said in both an overt and a covert fashion about the Hebrew people. You know that kind of fear-mongering. It always begins with sharing little tidbits that start to plant seeds, which start to cause unrest and distrust, and eventually it blooms into full-fledged conflict. Again, that's a story we've never heard of, right? Well, in the case of the children of Israel, all the descendants of Jacob and Leah and Rachel and Bilhah and Zilpah, they were seen as enough of a problem that the answer was to enslave them. So for all intents and purposes, their freedom was gone. The covenant they had with God seemed to have completely evaporated. What kind of a future was before them now? At best, it looked grim. And then we know in this story that through the person of Moses, God once again enters this strange narrative. And so we pick up the story today after a series of devastating plagues that had brought about great suffering in Egypt. And the hope, of course, was that these plagues were going to finally convince Pharaoh that it was time to let these people go. Well, you have to wonder why it took 10 plagues to achieve the desired result, don't you? The River Nile turning to blood, the plague of frogs, lice, flies, or wild animals, depending on how you translate it, diseased livestock, boils, a thunderstorm of hail and fire, locusts, darkness for 3 days, and death of all of the firstborn. Now, wouldn't you think when it got to the epidemic of the boils that Pharaoh would have had enough by that point? Well, really, friends, for my money, frogs and lice would have done it. That would have been the end of it, right? But as the story goes, it wasn't until it came to the point of the death of all of the firstborn that Pharaoh decided the Hebrews were more trouble than they were worth. It does cause you to wonder a little bit about this character of Pharaoh, doesn't it? The storyteller could really only make sense of this person by saying that God had hardened his heart. Well, maybe you're like me and might instead say, this wasn't God at work. This was pure unabashed ego, an attribute that we know we never see in world leaders and politicians. Well, whatever the case, we have recorded a rather detailed instruction on how to remember this Passover that was going to happen, of how the Hebrew nation, the Hebrew people, were to spread blood with a hyssop branch over the lintel of the doorpost so that they might be spared from the plague of death. Well, this whole narrative about the plagues, Pharaoh, and the freeing of the people, let's face it, isn't this a troubling narrative at best? Enough to question the morality of this God that's talked about at worst? Anytime the loss of innocent life is said to be the work of God, we have entered a theological pit. Sometimes, friends, we really are better off asking the question up front. Is this story really trying to teach us about the nature of God? Or is this story really about something else? Well, the answer as it relates to this Passover story, I believe, can really be viewed as being in the something else category. While there was a truth that was told of God, that God was faithful, and God did not forget the Hebrew people, I would say we leave it there. And that's about it when it talks to teaching about the nature of God. We really would be better off realizing that this passage was teaching about how this Passover meal began. Biblical scholars are in general agreement that these particular stories were the result of writing during and after this period of exile that Israel had experienced many, many centuries later. When the people are under oppression, it's a time that we tend to cling tightly to traditions that have meaning to us. What better time to remember this Passover story than when the people were again in exile and they needed to remember God's faithfulness and why this Seder had ever begun? You see, friends, this story, I believe, really serves as a background more about what is a very important ritual in Jewish life, the observance of Passover, as well as the weekly observance of Shabbat, Sabbath. In both instances, there was a ritual meal, and the ritual meal was the backbone of the celebration, and it was the grounding for remembering God's faithfulness and how God had been faithful throughout the ages and that redemptive work could always be done, could always take place. Now, the Passover meal, for those of you who haven't perhaps attended one, includes a cup of wine, as well as the ritual breaking of unleavened bread, the matzah. Now, the weekly Sabbath dinner also includes to this day a cup of wine over which there is a special blessing. The Kiddush is said every time, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam borei pi hagafen. Praise to you. Praise to you, Adonai, our God, sovereign of the universe, creator of the fruit of the vine. The celebration over the cup happens every single week. And the meal also includes a blessing over bread. And this weekly ritual that was based on the Passover, it really was a much later development, Passover, centuries later. And it's also important to remember that what this was really about, the purpose of these meals, is to emphasize how important and how critical community is in order to truly experience faith. It should not be a surprise to us that followers of Jesus to this day have a ritual meal, communion, which is a foundation of our faith. You see, for Jesus, there was a very extraordinary nature to what was really an everyday occurrence, gathering around the table. But it became extraordinary when it was Sabbath and when people came together on the Sabbath. You see, Jesus knew that there was a power, a real power in remembering and in the acknowledgement of God's presence and God's faithfulness to God's people. And when we think about the story of the Last Supper, our basis for communion, we forget that Jesus was there celebrating Passover. And the instruction he was giving that night to his disciples was not really about the bread and the wine. Instead, what he was saying was to remember him, to remember God, because, and this is really the radical statement about what Jesus was saying, every single time we gather around the table, whether it be in our sanctuary or whether it be in our homes, it has this amazing potential to create sacred space and holy time. You see, what communion was about is Jesus was telling us gathering around the table is not just some little trivial thing. Anytime we gather around the table, it's a holy event. And anytime you do that, I am there. I promise that I am there in your midst. Well, what we've ended up with is modern followers of Jesus. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, it's not really what he intended. Now, for a good deal of the formative decades of Christianity, I got a little secret to share with you. Communion was something that happened in the home, no clergy required. Now, I'm not supposed to say that, but friends, that's the truth. That's our history. Families came together in fellowship and to remember and to find strength in the very fact that they were being together. It was not a ritual confined to church buildings. Instead, it was saying the holy can be found anywhere. It can be found about around our dinner table, believe it or not. The other thing this whole Passover narrative that we heard today poses to us is a challenge. And I like to think of that challenge in terms of a question. What does it mean? What does it mean to us to gather around the table and to share a meal? Does it have meaning to us? And I believe that's a very difficult question to answer in our current American culture. Does gathering for a meal help us to connect with the holy? Is it a time when we choose to reconnect and celebrate and cry and laugh about everything that life brings us? Or has gathering around the table really become something else? With our hurried schedule, with the places to be, with our smartphones, with the sporting activities blaring in the background, have we forgotten about the sacredness and what can happen when we gather around the table? I think this table is a really important symbol that we, as followers of Jesus, have forgotten about. And the reason it's so important is when we gather around the table, it gives us an opportunity to disconnect from all of those many things that so fill our lives and bog us down. It gives us an opportunity to disconnect from that and to find strength and hope and compassion in the people with which we share a meal. You see, I think the reason this Passover meal was lifted up as such a central issue is it was God giving the people a chance, and as that evolved into the Sabbath, giving the people a chance every single week to stop from being caught up in all the other stuff, instead to focus on that which is most important: relationship, being present with each other, sharing a meal when we can open ourselves to the possibility of joy and that God is present in our midst, because God has promised that presence will always be there. For me, that's the real power of communion. It's a marker that we come together, that we can be one, that we have a commonality. Regardless of what our households are, we have a commonality every time we gather around the table. And that's what Jesus said: every time you do it in remembrance of me. Remember, I am always in your midst. And that's why we gather around the table in our homes, and symbolically when we're here in the sanctuary, because we know how important that sacred space and that holy time can be in our lives. And friends, I guess the question for us today is, are we open to reclaiming that? Or is it something we think is just not worth the effort? What do we think? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.